And welcome back. After living abroad in China last year, Brian Gass of Richmond Heights became fed up with the pollution there, so he decided to change his lifestyle and get in touch with nature by hiking the Pacific Crest Trail. It's a 2,600-mile trail from Mexico to Canada. He's doing it to get in touch with nature and to raise awareness and funds for research for a rare genetic skin disease that he and three of his siblings have called ichthyosis. We talked with Brian early this week in Lake Tahoe as he nears the halfway point of his journey, and I first asked him exactly what ichthyosis is.
It presents itself as like a dry, scaly skin. For some people, it can just be like just dry skin on their hands and feet. But for me, it's more, it's all over my body, and I can experience like my skin is very sensitive to the sun, and I have to like protect my skin. And it can be like dry, itchy, and flaky without showers and use of lotion. But it's been quite interesting as I've done the traveling and the hiking and the walking, experiencing my skin go through all these different stages. And it actually has improved through walking and all this physical activity. But ichthyosis, there's quite a few. I think there's more than 8 varieties of ichthyosis, and they can range from life-threatening to very mild. It's an umbrella term for different diseases.
What sort of precautions do you have to take on the trail, as it were, as a result of the condition?
I carry lotion to protect my skin. I mostly use like heavy oily lotions. And if I can prevent my feet and hands and body from getting dried out and cracked, I can mostly keep myself healthy on the trail. Everyone leaves the trail to resupply and stay in hotels, and that's a great way to get your skin healthy again, or maybe reprotect your skin. But most precautions come with the sun. That's been the biggest problem and struggle. So I wear long sleeves and protect my face quite a bit.
Well, let's talk about the hike itself for a little bit. You're traveling at times through some very, very difficult country. Tell us about that part of it for you.
Yeah, well, it's a struggle for everyone in some places. The Sierras, we got there pretty early. I've actually been hiking alone, but I also hike. I've kind of been hiking with a small group. I catch them on and off every once in a while. And the biggest struggle has been the Sierras so far. The snow was quite deep towards the passes, so you would be post-holing through the snow, which is like punched through the snow as you walk. And our hiking pace, which is normally around 3 miles an hour, turns into about 1 mile an hour, and you're climbing on rocks and punching through the snow and, you know, crossing rivers, and it's quite an adventure, and it's rewarding in the beauty of the Sierras, but it's very difficult and hard hiking, and I'm glad I had a month of hiking in the desert to get ready for that.
Well, the desert presents its own problems.
It does. The desert obviously is hot, and the sun is very strong there, and you have to adapt. That's the major thing that I've learned, is adapting to get the miles in. In the desert, I would take siestas and not really hike from noon to about 4 or 5 o'clock, and I would do some night hiking, which is its own sort of fun thing to do, and a little scary to hike at night alone in the desert. And then another thing about the desert was the wind was just extremely powerful. We hiked often under wind farms. So that gives you an idea. It's just very strong gusts, and everything's blowing around and just getting so dirty.
Isn't the desert rather cold at night as well?
It is. It really varies in temperature. And the desert, I thought of the desert and the PCT maybe as like flat. It was going to be like flat and long and, you know, just like your typical desert that you have in your mind, but it's actually very mountainous, and we climb many mountains, and so you would get up in elevation and it might be very cold, and then you would go back down into valleys in the day, and it would be very, very hot. So there was a few nights I actually got frost on my sleeping bag from it being so cold at night, so I'd wake up with ice on my sleeping bag.
What about critters? There are some things that we don't care too much for that are out there in the desert and in the mountains as well.
Yeah, the critters haven't been such a big factor. The major thing people talk about on the PCT is obviously bears, rattlesnakes and mountain lions.
That's what I mean.
I've seen a couple rattlesnakes in the desert. None of them bothered me. They just scooted off the trail, and I saw them. And then mountain lions, it's something that you kind of always think about when you're hiking in the desert, but mountain lions are on the entire trail. But I haven't seen one. For the most part, you really don't see mountain lions because they're very shy. But there were signs posted by some private citizen, and they were kind of scary. It was like, you are in mountain lion country, and here's all the statistics of recent deaths in the past 10 years related to mountain lions. And it was not a very big boost of confidence for night hiking.
What do you carry with you? What is your pack like?
Everything is super lightweight. Most people who hike the PCT are trying to minimize their pack weight as much as possible because we just have to do so many miles. So you get rid of a lot of luxury items that you might carry on a weekend backpacking trip or normal car camping. And so my pack weight without food and water is about 8 pounds.
8-0, I think.
8-0, yeah, 8 pounds, which is on the lighter side. Most people, I think, would be around maybe 12 to 15 pounds for their base pack weight. And then you add food and water, and that goes up a little bit, just depending on how much water you need that day and how much food you need for that stretch.
What about the resupplies? You mentioned that you have to do that from time to time, obviously. How is that plotted out?
Well, it's actually really simple, and it's one of the biggest things that people plan for on the PCT, but you don't really need to plan too much for resupply. Usually every 3 or 4 days you can get off the trail. In the Sierras, it's like 6 to 8 days, but you have a couple options. You can hitchhike into a town and pick up a package that you mail to yourself to a post office with all the stuff that you think you'll need, all the food and those things. Or you go to supermarkets and just buy the stuff. I mostly go to supermarkets and just pick up food to help support the local economies of the towns that we go through. And you're just never really sure. If you pack all the boxes in advance, you might not like the food that you've been eating for a month. So your appetite kind of changes and your taste buds might go through a little change. So I didn't pack too many resupply boxes at my home. But some people pack resupply boxes for the entire trail.
What are the kinds of things that you do eat? I mean, it has to be something easily prepared.
Yes, exactly. I am actually stoveless, so I don't cook any of my food. Many people do cook, but I decided just to drop the weight, and I don't have to have a pot or stove or anything like that. I eat instant mashed potatoes. I eat cold-cooked ramen, just soak ramen, and I eat a lot of tuna, tortillas, and cheese, and candy. The goal with food, for packing food, is over 100 calories an ounce. So that would be the most efficient food per weight, and that's mostly candy and fatty foods, because we're just burning so many calories as we walk. You just need as many calories as you can get into your body and you can carry at the same time is the goal.
Have you lost weight?
I have. I've lost, I think, between 15 and 20 pounds. I started the trail at 235 pounds, I think. So I had some extra weight to lose, and it's most of the men lose weight on the trail, quite a bit of weight.
Just to be clear, with regard to people you are with off and on, you are by yourself most of the time, is that correct?
Yes, I started the hike alone, but there's many people hiking the PCT, and they're hiking all the way to Canada. I've met so many wonderful people, and some people go my pace, and I catch up with them towards camp at night. Sometimes I don't see people for a few days. We just split up in towns, and then we kind of come back and reunite. It's quite a bit of fun to see people again on the trail. But I do most of my hiking alone.
Is loneliness an issue for you when you're out there in the desert at night or in the Sierras?
The desert at night, it was more of a fear thing because of mountain lions, and it's just dark, and it was moonless when I first started hiking at night. But I really love solitude and hiking alone and just getting lost in my thoughts. And so it's been really enjoyable for me.
I imagine this particular trail gets a lot of traffic. I mean, it's well known and it's beautiful.
Yeah, the sections, the beautiful sections definitely do. The Sierras, you would maybe see 10 other hikers a day coming on the John Muir Trail, which runs with the Pacific Crest Trail for about 200 miles. So you'd see quite a few other hikers. But the desert was really only Pacific Crest Trail hikers for the most part.
So when you run into other people, though, what's the procedure? Is there a little ceremony, stop and chat and compare notes, or what goes on?
Yes, it's very funny. So you ask people their name, and everyone has trail names, or most people do, and their nicknames. My nickname is Mongo. Everyone has trail names to help you remember all the people you meet. So instead of meeting, like, you know, four or five different, you know, Michaels, it's someone's like Coffee or Sheriff Woody or something really easy to remember. And they usually, the names usually have like a separate meaning, and they have funny stories behind them. And it's a fun thing. And so, and then after you ask someone's name, you usually ask when they started. Because everybody's really, depending on when you started and where you're at on the trail, kind of tells you how fast that hiker is. So if you're coming up on someone who started way before you, you're probably not going to see them again once you pass them. So kind of changes the way you talk to them, because it's kind of like hello, goodbye sort of thing. Just have a good hike.
Do most people travel in pairs or in small groups, unlike yourself?
Yeah, there's quite a few couples, but there's also a lot of people that I went. I would say it's mostly solo travelers, but a lot of people end up in groups.
Why do most people do it? Is it just a challenge to walk that 2,600 miles? And do most of them walk the entire route?
Yeah, I think most people crave the adventure, and they just love the idea of the long set goal of walking all the way to Canada. But I think it kind of evolves as you hike, and it changes into a lifestyle and just something that's so fun to wake up and do every day, and to meet the people and to hang out with the friends that you've made, that it kind of becomes less of a goal just to get to Canada and more of a fun adventure.
30 miles a day, that's about what you're averaging, I take it.
Yes, when I'm hiking. And then when I take days off, that obviously brings down the average. So I think my average about now is around 25 miles a day. The Sierras was much slower. It was around 20 miles a day, just because of the slow walking that I was talking about and the tough terrain.
Brian, I understand you're at Lake Tahoe now. Where is that with regard to the halfway point of this trek of yours?
I'm 200 miles away from the halfway point, so I'm at 1,100 miles.
1,100 miles. Yep. When you take time off, what do you do? Where do you go?
Well, it depends where you're at, but you're usually pretty busy. You just want to relax, but you have so many things to do in towns, laundry, showers, get food, maybe fix gear and make phone calls. And for me, I have to blog when I'm in towns, or I try to. So it's quite busy. And then the entire time you're in towns, you're eating food, just eating tons of food. I think, on most town stop days, I eat about 10,000 calories. Just to kind of fill back up and replenish.
What kind of towns are we talking about? Are we talking about, very small little towns, or are we talking about anything that's of any size?
For the most part, the best places to stop and the most places we have stopped are small towns, because things are closer together. And we don't really feel the need or want to be in a big town just because we're so dirty and just grimy. And so it's nice to just be in a small town and have everything right to access, easy to get to, because we're all on foot, unless we're hitchhiking.
And I guess the townspeople are used to seeing people like yourself coming through.
Yeah, they're used to seeing hikers, and they almost everyone's super nice and really accommodating, and they know what hikers need. It's pretty cool. They get really excited, and we're helping support their town, so they really appreciate the business.
What sort of, Brian, what sort of response have you been getting to your blogs and any of the material you're putting out there with regard to your condition, ichthyosis?
It's gone very well. I'm actually going to be Skyping or video chatting with the ichthyosis convention that's coming up here in June. I think it's on June 20th. And that all came from blogging and the fundraising I've been doing. I've also been lucky enough to talk with a few families that have children with ichthyosis. Because one of the major things that I like to talk about with people is how people raise their children with ichthyosis and not coddling them or letting them have self-pity for their skin disease. I really like to talk to parents and help them understand what their kids are going through.
Well, that's good that you're having an impact. I mean, that's making all of this worthwhile. Has there been any point during this trek in which you've said, gee, I wish I hadn't started this whole thing?
Not at all. It's been amazing. I've enjoyed every day. I've enjoyed even the hard ones are just very rewarding. I absolutely love it.
Has there been a most memorable moment?
Well, I think one of the toughest days and the one that I'll never forget is I went into the Sierras and I had about 7 or 8 days of food, but it ended up taking 10 days. So I had to ration the last 3 days with 1 day of food. And that's really tough at that point because your metabolism is just going like crazy, but there's nowhere to exit the trail. And so I was just really down and my skin was terrible. It was just, I was having a really bad time. It was probably the worst part of the worst time on the trail. And I was in one of the most beautiful areas in the Sierras. Almost every day I just find so much joy in being out in nature, and I was just not having a good time. And I was upset with myself for that. And I was sitting by this creek. I was having like the last meal I had, it was cold mashed potatoes and tuna. And I was just like so upset, and I was like on the verge of just crying and breaking down. And a fellow PCTer actually came up. He just saw that I was doing really bad and I didn't have much food. And he came up and he was like, oh, I have this Mountain House lasagna. And Mountain House meals are like the best, the most tasty freeze-dried meals. And he gave me a whole one, and it just made my day so much better. Turned everything around, and I climbed up to the mountain pass, and I was just had such a good day after that.
Brian Gass of Richmond Heights, the 21-year-old, hopes to return to college this fall. And for photos of Brian and of the Pacific Crest Trail, visit our website at stlpublicradio.org. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about new initiatives and research at the Danforth Plant Science Center and their effect on the community. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks for listening. I'm Don Marsh.